You're listening to episode 6 of A Little Bit of Python, an occasional podcast with Michael Ford, Jesse Noller, Brett Cannon, Andrew Kutchling and Steve Holden. This is a special episode recorded at PyCon Atlanta 2010. If you have any feedback, suggestions or just flames, you can email them to all@bitofpython.com. You're listening to A Little Bit of Python. This is Michael Ford, and I'm sitting in what was the green room, the speaker's room, at PyCon 2010 in Atlanta. The sprints are still on, but there's not so many folk here. And I'm sitting here with Van Lindberg, who is one of the members of the Python Software Foundation. He was the chairman for PyCon organizing it, and well, we'll find out if he's up for the challenge again. Van's a very, very clever guy. He's an author, very tech savvy, but he's a lawyer, and we don't hate him. So hello, Van. It's great to be speaking with you.
It's good to be speaking with you as well. I'm glad to be doing it.
How have you found PyCon this year?
I've loved it. I think it, in a lot of ways, it may sound self-serving, but I think this has been one of the best PyCons ever. We've been able to, over the course of a couple of years, iron out some of the little wrinkles that inevitably come up. And so I think that we're getting to the point where we're pretty good at this. And it's a lot of fun.
Cool. And how many years have you been involved in organizing PyCon?
In organizing, this is my third year. I did attend 1 year before that. So I've been at PyCon at least 4 years, and then organizing for three.
That's the same. This is my fourth PyCon. And even in just the space of sort of, well, 3 years, I guess, end to end, PyCon has changed quite a lot in that time. And one of the ways it's changed has been the number of attendees.
Oh, yes. We are... If you look at 4 years ago versus today, it looks like we're going to be almost exactly double the size. Our best estimate right now is that we had over 1,100 attendees.
Really, 1,100?
Yes.
So that's the best ever.
Yes, it's the largest ever. This is also the largest in terms of the amount and variety of material that we've ever had.
We had an extra track this year. Is that all right?
That's right. We had 5 tracks, which was 95 talks. We had a total of 28 tutorials, and we also had the poster sessions this year.
That was another new thing for PyCon. How do you think that went?
I think it went incredibly well. I heard a lot of people say that they were planning on submitting posters for next year. The only complaint was that we didn't have enough.
So this year we had a tremendous trouble selecting the talks. We had about twice as many talks as we did slots to put in them. So that was a very difficult job. But I think we were able to accommodate almost all of the people who wanted to do poster sessions. So you're saying next year selecting posters is going to be just as hard as selecting talks was this year?
I think that's right. And we're already getting ideas for talks and posters for next year. People are just really excited. One of the things in particular that we're going to be doing for next year is Extreme PyCon.
Ah, right. This sounds great.
we're borrowing a page from the late 1990s or early 2000s. Marketing materials, computer marketing materials, everything had to be extreme. But this is going to be a series of sessions, talks, one in each time slot, where we're going to be finding domain experts and people who are really good communicators and telling them, talk like you're talking to your peers. Talk about the problems that you're facing and how you're addressing them. And it gives them permission to skip some of the introductory material, because right, we'll have four other tracks of talks, a lot of which will have introductory material. But for those who really want to have
the mega advanced stuff.
Yes.
I mean, we've got some enormously clever people in the Python community. We've got people like Ian Bicking, and we've got the PyPy guys. We've got the Unladen Swallow guys. These are enormously clever people, yet people have still seemed reluctant to submit the sort of really advanced talks. It was interesting that the most popular talk, or certainly it seemed that way to me, was David Beasley's talk on the internals of the Python Global Interpreter lock. You know, something not for the faint-hearted.
Yes. I think what it is that people are afraid sometimes that if they talk about something that is somewhat hard or somewhat obscure, there just won't be as much call for it. It won't be as popular.
Right. But I mean, Alex Martelli, Raymond Hettinger, these guys do advanced talks on Python patterns, the Python internals, and they're always very well attended. I think people are also nervous of pushing themselves forward and sort of saying, hey, I'm advanced, I can do advanced stuff, and they sort of, it's a bit easier to do a middle range talk perhaps.
I think that's true, and that's one reason why we're trying to line these up early. We'll give people a whole year to come up with something.
Start preparing your extreme PyCon talk now.
Exactly.
I'm really looking forward to that. That sounds like it's going to be great. So did you actually get to go to much of the talk? I imagine you were kept fairly busy during the conference.
I got to attend three sessions.
Okay.
Yes. Which
is out of how many talks did we have? 95?
Yes.
Man.
Most of the time, you know, you sort of feel like a bee, you know, flitting from one little spot to another, back and forth, because you know, sort of need to keep your finger on the pulse of what's going on. Still, I was very excited. The one that I liked best was natural language processing with NLTK and Hadoop.
Wow.
And
so Hadoop is a distributed platform, right?
Is that the
Yahoo guys?
Yes, it's a Java implementation of the MapReduce framework.
Right, right.
And what they talked about is being able to apply natural language processing techniques across a cluster using Hadoop.
Well, I think that sounds really interesting. I think libraries like the natural language toolkit, and then there's frameworks like SciPy, and mm-hmm. you find whole sort of domain areas where the Python libraries are the thing to use, and that they bring people into Python, the scientists and the engineers.
I think so. I mean, there are a lot of little islands of Python users. Animation, particularly animation pipelines, is completely owned by Python. It's the de facto integrated scripting language in just about every major animation product.
Yep. I did an interview earlier on with Paul Hildebrandt of Disney, and they use an enormous amount of Python in their animations.
Yes, and not just Disney. Pixar, DreamWorks.
It's Weta.
Weta, yes. Every one of them. The entire industry is more or less standardized around Python as the scripting language interface.
So how did you get into Python, Ben?
Well, I was, before I was a lawyer, I was a programmer and programmed in, you know, a dozen different languages of different types.
Was this at college or before college?
This was at college. I'd done some stuff before college, but not real serious. And when I came to Python, I just fell in love with it. We talk about how Python fits your brain. I just felt that at last I was not fighting with the language to try and express myself. And so, you know, I can still do stuff in Java or C, but when I can, I do it in Python.
But Python's not your day job. You're a lawyer, but you have a very interesting job, interesting job title. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, I am an intellectual property and open source lawyer.
That sounds terrifying.
It's I try not to be evil.
You're the lawyer for the amongst other things for the Python Software Foundation, right?
That's correct.
So definitely not evil.
I spend about half my time working on patent-related issues and about half the time working on open-source-related issues. And one of the things that I think is interesting and I think is quite fun is that for patents, I focus on this area of patent law. It's a patent practice called re-examination. And that is where you find prior art and you go through this process to submit it to the patent office and convince them that a patent was granted in error.
Right.
And if you do it right, the patent will ultimately end up getting revoked.
So the Free Software Foundation have had a very successful and well-publicized campaign of trying to get several particularly bad patents re-examined. Have you been involved in that?
It's the EFF.
It's the EFF, yes.
That's the same process that I do. I've not been involved in that one, although I think I applaud what they're doing. Most of the time when I'm doing things, it is, you know, one of my clients has been sued by a stupid patent, and we help that patent go away.
So you fight the patent trolls.
I fight patent trolls. it makes me glad to be on the winning side, on the non-evil side.
And in this whole area of intellectual property and how it relates to open source, you wrote a book on the subject.
Yes,
I read the book. I think it's incredible because it's a book about law that's actually fun to read. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's something that every open source developer ought to read. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the book? And
yeah, this was.
What's the title of the book?
The title is Intellectual Property and Open Source. What the idea was that there were a lot of programmers and developers. You know, these are the people on the front lines creating and using intellectual property. But if you look at Slashdot or Reddit or news.yc or wherever you go, there's just a tremendous amount of noise and argument about the principles of intellectual property. And most of that is just simply not right. And so perhaps it's quixotic, but I'm sort of...
somebody wrong on the internet.
Yes, there's somebody wrong on the internet.
So you set out to put them right.
I set out to put them right. It's a one-man quest to try and raise the level of debate around intellectual property. It touches everything from, you know, the term intellectual property. What does it mean? You know, why is there such a thing? Why did...
Richard Stallman had a few things to say on that, on the subject, didn't he?
He did.
Your book has a very pragmatic approach. It's not an ideological book. It's about this is the law and this is the way it applies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I tried very hard to as closely as possible describe the way that I thought that things would apply and the way that a court would see different situations. And not really trying to change the world, just trying to explain it, because we all, again, this is the world we live in. We consume and we create intellectual property, and we need to and people need to understand how that works, even if they don't support it in all the ways in which it is currently being used.
Right. Sure.
You know, I surely don't. I still agree with the concept of a lot of types of intellectual property, but I also recognize that there are a lot of excesses that I don't agree with.
Well, one of the interesting things I took away from the book was that that the free software licenses that we rely on as open source developers and distributing projects, the way that those licenses get their validity from the existing copyright law and from the intellectual property law, so that if you release something under an open source license, you're actually using copyright law, and having some understanding of that is very helpful.
Yes, absolutely.
So Van, we've talked about PyCon this year, how it was a great success. We had more people than we've ever had before. We also had a higher percentage of women than we've had in previous years, right?
Yes. That was... I have to congratulate Gloria Jacobs and Steve Holden. Together, those two really put together and spearheaded an effort to recruit women and bring them to PyCon. And so it may not seem like a tremendously high percentage, but we think that we had about 11% women.
It was definitely noticeable that there were many more women.
Other open source conferences generally have around 1-2% women, and so although it's nowhere near parity for a technology focused conference, and particularly an open source conference, we're pulling far ahead of our weight. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that during Guido Van Rossum's keynote, he was wearing a t-shirt that said Python is for girls. And someone asked him about the t-shirt and said, what about Python makes it particularly suited for girls? And he said, well, there's nothing that makes it particularly suited for boys either, so it must be equally suited for girls.
And so what about next year? We've talked about Extreme PyCon. Are you already starting to plan PyCon 2011?
A little bit, yes. We're starting to put together the team. There will be a couple of weeks of work just to make sure that we tie a bow around PyCon 2010, making sure doing all the final accounting and making sure all that is handled. But there's a lot of exciting things around PyCon 2011. One thing that I hadn't thought of earlier is we are going to be having vendor tutorials in 2011. Now, this is something that we've never done before, and these will be in addition to the regular tutorials. The thing that made me think of this was our discussion of how there are these islands of Python users that use Python because it's embedded into frequently a proprietary product, you know, ESRI's ArcGIS or
Mayer in the animation world.
Exactly. There's always been a reluctance on the part of the organizers and the program committee to have tutorials that were based around a proprietary product. But for those who are using the proprietary product in their job, they'd like to know how to use Python to make it better, to be more productive, to use their tools that they've already got more in a more efficient way.
And this is perhaps a way of reaching it. There are a lot of companies and organizations who use Python who we haven't really been very effective at reaching, I don't think. I think there are tens of thousands of Python programmers out there who'd get an enormous amount out of PyCon. And by reaching into the particular islands that they're working in, this is one way we can bring them into the community a bit more.
Exactly. PyCon is such a fantastic experience. And it allows us to address the entire community. We have a growing ecosystem of people who are embedding Python and using it in all sorts of places.
And of course, there's IronPython and Jython, both of which in recent years have really grown in popularity and bringing Python into other programming communities as well.
Yes. And so having sessions dedicated to integration with those other platforms and those other products, I think will be a tremendously interesting and valuable part of PyCon 2011.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be great, so I'll see you in 2011 at the next PyCon then.
Sounds good.
Thanks very much
for talking
to us.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.